If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I am your other host, Ben Harrison.
Ben, we've returned from our first tour, Conquering Heroes.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Kind of a lot has happened.
Yeah.
Since the last time we recorded. The tour.
Yeah.
The election.
Mm.
A ton of shit.
Yeah, everything you've heard up until now was recorded before the end of the world. So we had no idea that we were sending messages into a bleak hellscape known as Fascism America.
We're also both equally distressed.
Yeah.
I'm just unable to articulate mine.
It was definitely a different tour than I envisioned before the election, because I thought it would just be like another time. And I don't think that I'm going far out on a limb when I say that like a huge majority of the people in our viewership have been feeling very distressed and despondent. We've gotten a lot of emails from people saying that they appreciated having something as dumb and non-election oriented as our show to kind of escape into around that time. And it didn't feel like the most natural thing to be going and like filling a room up with people and doing our jokes for them. But people really came through, and it wound up being a totally joyful handful of days. Like, we had three great podcast shows, and then we had an awesome fundraising event with Cyrus Farivar for the National Center for Science Education, which now feels more urgent than ever. And I think we raised like a few hundred bucks for them, which is great. And that was, you know, money that our viewers gave out of the kindness of their hearts.
Really thankful that people came out the way they did. I was really excited at the reception.
Yeah.
I was very grateful to the venues that hosted us against their own instincts, many of them.
Yeah.
When our shows had ended and we had sold out all of them on weeknights, they were like, we had no idea what you guys were going to be about, and we're on a Tuesday night selling hundreds of dollars in alcohol. Like, thank you. They seemed just a little bit blown away by the whole thing.
Yeah.
About as blown away as we were by how great things went. So thank you for coming out and seeing us.
Yeah.
And for being so nice in meeting us. That was a real big deal.
Yeah. It really felt like the hassle of going on the tour was worth it when we got to finally meet some of our viewers, and they're just all such lovely people, and relayed funny and touching and harrowing stories to us about like their relationship with the show. And I think that like one of the things that Adam and I have both felt really grateful for is how much the people that listen to this show have kind of insisted upon forming a community around it. You know, we haven't done nearly as much work as we probably could have in fostering that, but people just did it anyways. And seeing that come alive at the shows was so cool. And I don't think I am speaking out of school, Adam, when I say I think the bug has bit us, and we are going to do more of those. So if we didn't come to your town, or if you couldn't get tickets this time, for sure we will be back.
it was a great experience all around, both personally and professionally. So can't wait to get back out there and see you.
Hooray!
Do you want to get back to dick, fart, and Trump jokes, Ben?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do some pod. It's season 4, episode 15. Ben, it's the halfway point in the series. First contact.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
A halfway point and potentially the high watermark. so this episode has like one of the great cold opens, which is a kind of an implied Riker initially getting pushed around in a hospital. And you never like look at his face for the first few beats. And he's a patient in a hospital that looks not terribly dissimilar from the kind of hospital that we are familiar with in our time. And yet the people that are working there are, you know, alien people, and they have a little bit of loaf and they got lobster hands. And one of the first things they notice is that Riker does not have lobster hands. And this really fucking floors them. Like, they are shocked when they get a load of what his hands look like.
It's interesting to me how contemporary this cold open is, because I think I just sort of take this open for granted. Like, this is a Grey's Anatomy open. Grey's Anatomy and hospital shows like it open their episodes with this 99 times out of 100. And this is the first time we get a Star Trek version of it, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it might as well be in a foreign language, just like hospital speak is. Like, get this guy 40 cc's of derpa derpa derp and like, bring those paddles over here. We got to save him. Like, it's sci-fied up a little bit, but yeah. This is what we know from contemporary television.
You know, my aunt was in the hospital one time, and they put her on some derpa derpa derp, and she developed a fairly crippling dependency on him. Not funny to joke around about derpa derpa derp, in my opinion.
I think opioid addiction, like people's addictions to derpa derp, are it's not anything to joke about, Ben.
Yeah, that's a hot potato. the Riker squint to credits is them pulling a mitten off of his hand and looking at all of his fingers.
What are you?
While holding his hand in their crazy lobster claws and
Doctor, this man has dick fingers. It's sort of Twilight Zone-y too, right? Like, there's a Twilight Zone episode where
the piggies.
Yeah. This is piggy hands.
Yeah. Speaking of beauty, Adam, I can't help but notice you got a haircut since our tour.
That was almost the first thing I did when I came home. Because let me tell you, nothing pokes a hole in your own sense of vanity like seeing pictures of yourself on stage a month and a half late on a haircut. So I basically went from the airport to the barber's chair.
Doctor, we've got to cut this man's hair, stat. Get the derpa derpa derp.
We see, as part of the credit sequence, a full page of credited writers, Ben. I don't know if you noticed this.
Oh,
this
I noticed.
By you. I think when you get a phone book of writers on an episode, my hopes were immediately grounded.
Right.
For what was to come.
That's a level setting move. Yeah. I knew this in the past, but this looking at these writing credits made me look it back up because I wanted to be sure I remembered how it went. If you see an ampersand in between the names of two writers, that means they are part of a team. So a writing team, it gets like is considered a single credit. And then if you see the word "and" in between two writers' names, that's when it was a different draft or a different part of the process. So there are 6 writer's credits and there are 3 ampersands and 2 ands. So I guess it was 3 different teams of writers touched this script at one point or another, which is pretty wild.
I think this is the most. It has to be the most, because I don't remember an entire scene being covered with credits before the way it was here.
Yeah, it's a little jarring, but I mean, there's definitely some some weird writing in this episode, but I think that like it's one of the most unique episodes, and that's not necessarily what you would assume based on seeing a ton of credits. Like they got some script that was crazy and interesting, but they had to kind of put it back into the vernacular of the show with a rewrite. Like that's not how this feels. Like it feels like an episode that's kind of from the perspective of the aliens, which is not the way it normally goes, you know?
To me, I think what you've touched on is one of the themes of this season. It's like the changing perspectives of what we're getting episode to episode. Like seeing this crew and this world through the eyes of an alien seems slightly related to seeing the world through the eyes of Data, for example, or seeing the world through the eyes of O'Brien and Keiko. Like I think we're just sort of taking a tour of the universe at this point in the series, and it's been pretty interesting.
Absolutely. So Riker is on this Delta Comfort Plus bed, and the doctor,
we gotta sew his fingers back together.
Yeah, they keep coming in and going like, hey, like your loaf is fake and ours is real. What's up with that? And he's like, oh, I have a gruesome birth defect and I had it corrected cosmetically. And they're like, what's up with no lobster claws? And he said, yeah, that's weird, right? Well, anyways, I'm from really far away, and my doctor, Dr. Crusher, probably shouldn't have said that. Anyways, she's going to be real hard to reach. So I'll just be going, and you guys don't you worry your pretty little heads about what a strange being I appear to be, because all of my internal organs are different from yours, and all of my external manifestations of being an alien are either fake or missing. So I'll just be on my way. And they're like, hey, what's this dustbuster? He's like, oh yeah, that's for a kid. Not my kid. I don't have a kid, but for a neighbor's kid.
I thought Riker would be better at lying than this.
He's a poker player, Adam.
Yeah. He does not hold up to interrogation as well as I had hoped.
Yeah, he's like looking around the room for his hologram sunglasses and baseball cap that he would normally wear in competitive poker. Can't find him, so all of his tells just bleed through.
So the B storyline is where we do some world building here.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to what we come to know is a chancellor's office, and he's having a conversation with his associates, and they're talking about space travel. And this lead scientist is like, you guys are not going to believe how close we are to space travel right now. Like, this is going to be amazing. We've completed our beta testing. We're going to go to space soon. So buckle up.
Yeah.
Like, it's happening.
We are 10 months out from full warp capability.
Yeah. And they are not universally pumped about this. Like, Chancellor Durkin's like, well, that's interesting, but there's going to be consequences because we have a world made up of both traditionalists, like the Roberts of the world, and then we've got exciting science-type people who are super stoked for this.
Yeah.
So Chancellor Durkin plays the middle, but there's very clearly, like, two halves of the argument that are also in the room. The scientist, Marastra, is pro-space. She's ready to get it on.
If I get your approval today...
And this other guy, Krolla, is the guy who's the traditionalist.
But perhaps we're moving too fast.
He says, fuck space. We've got people on this world who want things the way they were.
Yeah.
We don't need any of your microwave ovens or your cable televisions up in here.
Surprised me, because Krolla seemed like such a hipster. Like, he had that hipster mustache. He had the Snapchat glasses. Like...
He had great glasses.
he's snapping away. You got to check out his snaps.
Krolla seemed really familiar to me, and I put together that... You remember in the movie Ghostbusters? That first ghostbusting mission when they go to the hotel and that fucking asshole lets them in?
I had no idea to be so much, I won't pay it.
That's Krolla?
That's the guy.
Damn.
Yeah, that's Krolla. And so that's the tension. It's past versus future tension, right?
Yeah, and we get a couple of... story beats about the people that live on Melkor 3. That's about like how they kind of think of themselves as the apex of evolution and the like, you know, they're the supreme beings of the universe and their planet is in the center of the universe. I thought it was funny that they called their planet Malkor 3 if it's the number one planet. Shouldn't they have had a better name than that?
We start counting the planets from the third.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we get to the outermost planet, we start over from nearest to the sun.
Listen, we don't have a lot of digits on our hands, so our counting is really fucked up.
When you only have three digits on your hands, three is the best number.
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but I think that must be what happened.
Oh, man.
So Marasta, the science lady who is, you know, the one advocating for more space exploration, is back in her office when Picard and Troy just kind of materialize in front of her. And they're like, hey, so you know how you're like really interested in space? Guess where we just came from?
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got uniform.
To her credit, she really holds it together.
Yeah, like they are dropping bangers on her. Like, this is some fucking shit that they are explaining to her.
We've come with some very important information. About what?
About space. About the universe you're preparing to enter.
And she's like, oh, word? Like, that's amazing.
I really agree with Picard and Troy's decision to visit her at work. Because, man, if you do this at home, like, you might get shot.
Yeah. We don't know if this is an open carry planet or anything.
Yeah.
And she's, like, very receptive. Like, they're like, hey, we can actually prove that we're from space if you're willing to go on a little ride with us. And she's like, all right, I'm game.
Picard does a little porn movie pause here that I thought was really fun. He's like,
as you can see, we are physically quite different from Malkorians. And with your permission, I'm prepared to prove it to you.
They don't ask her, though, either, right? They just say, we have ways to show you, and then they fucking beam her up.
So, yeah, they go to the ship, and she's like, this is great. I feel like Picard was like, hey, can we get, like, a blue guy to hang out in 10 Forward for this? Because it would be great if there was somebody blue for her to get a load of when she comes in. And
this scene was great because Picard goes in and scouts it first.
Yeah.
Why does he do that?
Just wanted to make sure that there was a blue in there.
What else could he have been looking for?
I don't know.
Like, what's the worst scenario he could walk into, like, that would be a cause for, maybe we'll come back here some other time. I mean, a fist fight, right?
We have seen a bar fight break out in 10 Forward before. And, you know, given the frequency with which, like, mind control and other terrible things befall this ship. Picard's been away for 10 minutes. He could be coming back to anything, you know?
Marista's like, they have fist fights just like us. Except it's more beautiful up here.
Yeah. They basically lay this conundrum on her. And the conundrum is this. They would like to, you know, keep their first contact going smoothly, but because Riker is missing, they are in a tight spot, and they want to see if they can get some chill people high up in the ranks of power that are, like, down to kind of keep the secret and, like, help them roll this out in a slow way, but nonetheless, get their man back and make sure that Riker isn't, you know, killed or the secret isn't blown too early. Because they're talking a lot about how, like, first contact is the most intense kind of mission that a Federation starship can go on. And, you know, there's fuck-ups all the time, but, like, they have done a lot of research, and they even have, like, surface recon teams, and that's what Riker was there for. So they're trying to, like, get a sense of this species before they lift up their kimono.
When you're on a mission of consent, there's only one man that you send down to the planet's surface, and that's one Will Riker.
Yeah, he's going to get it.
And at this point, Riker's condition is still in question. Like, he's been seriously injured in some sort of riot.
Yeah.
They're patching him back together, but these doctors have some questions, and they will just not shut up about these questions.
Yeah, and there's kind of like a similar vibe at the hospital. There's like a handful of doctors, and one of them is definitely like, this guy's an alien. I swear it. I swear to God he's a fucking alien, and we gotta do something about it. And another is like, hey, like, he may or may not be man, but he's like our patient, and like, we gotta take care of him. That's like the first thing. And then we'll figure out what to do. And so they keep, you know, coming in and pressing him with hot questions. And, you know, things are getting tense for him there in the medical ward. And it's pretty clear at this point that Chancellor Durkin and Marasta don't know where Riker is or what has befallen him. And, like, it seems a little bit like the doctors in this hospital are, it's like up to them to decide like what to do about this situation.
That seemed really interesting to me, like that they didn't see the need to elevate this any higher than at the hospital level.
Yeah, like you'd think that they would at least call like the CDC or something like that.
Yeah, they saw fit to just like keep him around and do medicine on him.
Yeah.
I mean, the story is pretty transparently like the Malkorians are us.
Yeah.
Like, and when I try to transpose these story beats into our own world, I'm like, well, if an alien were ever to be admitted to Cedar Sinai, like, like the government is going to know about it almost immediately.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys in white hazmat suits holding radios suspiciously in a weapon-like way.
Yeah, and they never give Riker that treatment.
Yeah. It's, you know, like at some point he's like attempting to make an escape, and B.B. Newirth walks in.
Everybody, I'd like you to meet my date, Dr. Lilith Sternin, M.D., Ph.D., E.D.D., A.P.A.
And she's like, I love all the costumes in this hospital. They're all in like helmet Lang doctor costumes, and hers is like by far the like most runway-ish of all of them. but it turns out she's got a kink, and her kink is,
I've always wanted to make love with an alien.
And he's like,
it's not that easy. There are differences in the way that my people make love.
And she's like,
I can't wait to learn.
She's like, I've got an armpit.
Yeah.
B.B. Newirth fucking destroys this scene. She is so great.
Yeah, it's really fun. And
she is playing acting chess to everyone else's checkers.
I thought it was fun, too, because, you know, like this is kind of goes a little deeper down the rabbit hole of Riker's fetish being consent. It's not just consent. It's like informed consent, you know? He doesn't want her to sign up for something that she doesn't fully understand. So he he sets her expectations before he's willing to get down with her. But then he definitely fucks her. like they definitely bang.
I definitely relate to the idea of setting the expectations low, like maybe even exactly the way that Riker does it here. Riker's like, well, I don't know how any of your parts work, and I've never seen them before, and I don't know if mine are going to work with them. I feel like I said that very early on in my own sexual experience, almost exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good job by you, Riker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good job by him. Unfortunately for you, you don't have the genius level skill that a man who's let his imagination run wild on the holodeck would have. But
they could have gone full camp after this too. Like, she does that thing that we've seen people do to distract security people before, which is like, she walks out in the hallway and is like, what is that over there?
Is that the Goodyear blimp?
Yeah. And then Riker runs the other way. But she does not come out of the six bay like with her hair tousled and her lipstick smeared.
No, yeah, she definitely gets put back together.
And her pants on backwards. Yeah, like she is very put together, which I think leads us to believe that there was a beej involved, right?
Just like a spit or swallow type of situation.
Oh, God. Gross, Ben.
My love is a peeper.
So Riker runs out of the room and proceeds to just get his ass kicked.
Yeah, they really do not.
They pigpile him in a hurry.
They do not like the idea of him walking out of this hospital without their permission. And they really beat the shit out of him.
And it's not like he was 100% to begin with. Like, they kick him in the ribs a few times, ribs that are pretty tender.
Yeah.
And he almost did.
So that's when Crolla reveals to Chancellor Durkin, like, hey, we got one of these aliens. Like, we got some leverage now. Now we can really, like, you know, protect ourselves from these interlopers. Because the whole thing with the Malkorians is that they're worried about the kind of colonist effect, you know? Like, they don't want to be the Native Americans to the European settlers. They don't want the Enterprise to be the harbinger of their collapse as a civilization. So,
yeah, and Krolla's concerns are far less about tradition and far more about, like, extermination at this point.
Right. And, you know, to his credit, like, he's found, like, some evidence. Like, they definitely were, like, covertly spying on their culture, and also Riker brought a dustbuster, and he's like, why did you bring this fucking dustbuster if you're such a peaceful species? Like, what's that about? And so Picard is stuck kind of, like, debating all of these points with Durkin, and he's like, just, like, let us fucking have our guy. Like he doesn't pose a threat to you. Like, if you guys want us to go after this, we totally will. Like, we just wanted to get to know you guys. That was our entire motivation, and we fucked this up. We're going to cop to that, but you got to do the right thing here. And Durkin is having a very hard time getting to that point.
This actually does a lot to help their relationship. Durkin seems pretty impressed that Picard is willing to cop to making a mistake.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, for all of your technological advances, like, you're still fallible.
Yeah.
And that actually makes you far less threatening to me in a way that you were moments ago.
I think that Durkin is one of the weirdest characters because he's both a super moral and fairly wise leader, but he also, you know, has this security chief who is maybe a little bit more keyed up and hyper vigilant than, for example, Worf, but he is so condescending to the guy at the same time. Like, anytime Krolla, like, raises a concern, Durkin does the same thing that Picard always does, which is like, all right, dude, like, I'm sure it's a really big threat. Ignore. And that's got to be so frustrating if you're Krolla, right?
Yeah, and it finally, like, pushes him to the edge, right? He's like, if the Chancellor is really going to entertain the idea of accepting these future space people here,
yeah,
and it's going to fuck up the whole world, like, guess what? I'm ready to martyr myself.
Mm-hmm.
So he rolls into Riker's six bay room and is like, ready to interrogate. He tells the other doctors in there, wake him up. I don't care how dangerous it is. Stick him with a syringe. And
yeah. I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Yeah.
The doctor's like, fuck that. I'm the sort of doctor that believes in do no harm. You're going to have to find someone else. Krolla does that pretty quickly, and then they wake him up. And then they leave Krolla alone with Riker, which didn't make a lot of sense at the time, but it advances the story.
Yeah.
Krolla finally gets to a point where he's like, look, mister, I don't really care for your answers right now. Like, you're being pretty honest, which is great, but check it out. I'm going to make you kill me, and that's going to ruin any chance there is of there being any sort of relationship between our people. So
he's basically gotten to the point where Riker, like, he believes Riker saying that, like, we're here on peaceful business and we are just trying to get to know you guys. And Krolla is like, doesn't matter. Like, if the public is made aware of your existence, my society ceases to exist as I know it, and I can't allow that to happen. In fact, I'm willing to die for it.
It never mattered what you said.
Yeah.
So Krolla puts the dustbuster in Riker's hand and puts his hands around Riker's hands and shoots himself with the dustbuster.
Yeah.
And Riker's too weak to fight it off. He's barely there to begin with.
Yeah. And I guess it's because the phaser goes off that the Enterprise is able to establish a location for Riker.
Yeah, that moment is never established.
I feel like that's got to be it, right? Because they can detect phaser fire on the surface of a planet. So they've got to be like, okay, that's something that's not supposed to happen. Where did it happen? Let's beam.
Either that or what happened in the Chancellor's McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Somehow, like, the end of that conversation pointed to Riker's whereabouts, but we don't ever see it and don't ever know for sure.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the team that beams down is Worf and Beverly and another doctor, and they beam up with Krolla and Riker, and Picard's like, cool, I'll meet you guys back on the ship. So the episode gets wrapped up in the following way. Durkin is like leaning over Krolla's bio bed in Six Bay, and Krolla opens his eyes and he's like, what the fuck? I'm not supposed to be here. Is this heaven? And he's like, no, you sat yourself on stun, you dope. Like, you do not know what you're doing. And despite that, like, you win. You've proved your point that we are way too irrational as a species to accommodate the existence of other intelligent beings in the universe. And so Durkin and Riker's like, you know, obviously fine. They're like, oh man, moments later and he would have been dead, but we got him. And so Picard and Durkin and Morasta go back to the ready room, and Durkin's like, well, I've learned a lot, and I'm really glad I got to know you, but I just don't think my society is ready, and as its elected leader, that's my call to make. So I'm suspending all of our space research, and we're going to blow all of the resources that we would have been spending on that into education and cultural development so that, like, we can get our people ready for the idea of not being the hottest turd in the galaxy. And Morasta is like pretty devastated by this. Like, she totally disagrees with the call he makes, and so her solution to having whether or not to go back to this planet and know that the Enterprise and the Federation exists, but not be able to tell anybody, is like, just take me with you. Like, I don't want to go back to Malcor 3 and just like live the rest of my life with this secret that's gonna drive me fucking crazy. And so Picard is like, cool, yeah, we'll get you a room. We have a huge ship.
This moment felt very true to me. Like, it feels like the choice that I would make. You can't go back to your normal life after this.
Yeah.
You've seen 10 forward.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the blue guy at the bar.
That dude seems chill. I want to hang with him.
You've seen how a replicator and a transporter work. You can't just unsee that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a pretty humane decision of Picard. I think if he's following the rule of the law,
yeah,
I think instinctually he'd be like, sorry, you know what? It's all or nothing. It's either your entire planet or no one. But I thought it was a real humane choice not to ruin this poor woman's life by giving her a glimpse of this awesome future and then taking it away.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that would have been cruel.
I thought it would have been cool to make Morasta like a repeat character even. Like, she's presumably just going to live on the Enterprise now. And to have her, you know, come back up from time to time, I thought would be cool. Because it is really interesting to see the ship through the eyes of somebody who is just kind of on the verge of being able to imagine it. Like, I feel like this episode has a lot of parallels with the Mentakans episode when they give the lady a tour of the ship. But like in that episode, it's somebody who's so primitive that it's very hard to put yourself in their shoes talking to somebody who's so advanced that it's very hard to put yourself in their shoes. And this is like somebody who is basically one of us getting to take a peek at 24th century life. And that's a really fun thing to imagine, at least for me.
Right up to the point where the Chancellor chooses the past versus the future. Like, there was a very definite ache to that moment for me.
Yeah.
Because that felt contemporary too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Contemporary to our times.
We're going to make Malcor 3 great again.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, dumping a bunch of funding into education and social development sounds like... That sounds like science fiction to me.
Yeah.
Also.
Boy.
But pretty interesting timing on this episode for sure.
Yeah.
Ben, did this feel like a Roswell story to you also? In that, like, this sort of seemed like a retelling of that moment. Like, alien crash lands, gets injured, yeah, taken to some secret base. You know, like, all of the paranoia that plays out.
Absolutely. I mean, this almost has, like, an alien autopsy in it.
Yeah.
And I think that it is...
And you better get your biggest scalpels if you want a Y-incision Riker's dick. You're going to have to change blades halfway through.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to wear out. I mean, that thing is rock hard. Just choose that surgical steel right up.
What's that cloth partition that they use for, like, pregnant ladies? Does that thing have a name?
I don't think so.
Yeah. They're going to need a lot of those, Ben.
I thought it was an interesting choice to make these an alien, a type of alien that's got, like, pretty minimal head loaf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the main difference is that they have lobster claws. And
why is that the default?
I don't know. I mean, I just think that, like, they had to make these people look superhuman, you know? Yeah. They had to look like people and not like aliens so that their concerns were relatable. You know, I think that they, like, when we flip it around and we have a Roswell story, the alien is always super alien and gross. And, you know, like, we don't sympathize with that creature as much.
If it's a planet of Feklars.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I really did. I think it might be in my top five.
Whoa.
How about yourself?
I liked it too, but I don't love it enough to place it on my mountain, you know. But I did like it quite a bit, and I felt its themes were appropriate. So for that reason and a few others, I thought it was fun.
I just think it's terrific, you know. It totally overcame the writing by committee problem. And
boy, what a setup that was. This really exceeded those expectations, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, that is all about that episode. How do we usually transition out of this part of the show?
We hit the button next to the blinking light that says we have a priority one message.
Oh, yeah. We got to find out if that light is true or just like the check engine light in the Mercury Mountaineer I recently inherited, which is always on.
Congratulations.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first and only priority one message is from your devoted and loving Huss. And it is for my precious Prun, which is not as easy to pronounce as you might think.
That's a tongue twister.
It goes like this. This message is from Bruce to his beloved and precious wife, mother of his children, and love of his life, Chanda Russell. Could be Chanda. We're getting another Kirsten thing going on here.
Sure.
It will surely be surprising to be listening to The Greatest Generation with a Huss and hear your name. I'm happy to support an excellent podcast with the added benefit of giving an unexpected gesture of love to my woman, Chand.
Is it possible that Huss is an abbreviation for Husnock?
Let me show you something, Ben.
Oh, Kevin, don't say my name. It's so creepy.
If there's one thing that is most certainly not precious to me, it is the Husnock.
But Kevin, I thought you kind of regretted what you did to them. Wasn't that the whole thing that you were kind of, you felt really bad about the way it went down with the Husnock?
There is no punishment to fit my crime.
But you've moved on from Rashan, and now you're hanging out with Chand. Is that how it goes?
I prefer my real dolls to sound very similar in name. That way when I scream them out, they don't become offended if I confuse them.
I feel like I changed the premise of the bit on you, like, midstream, and I feel bad about that, Kevin.
You're making this comedically difficult for me.
Yeah.
You know what happens when I become angry?
Yeah. In improv, they call this pimping, and I could see why it would make you angry.
I wish to now destroy all improv groups everywhere. 1,000 yes ands screaming out in terror before going quiet. I'm getting out of this bit. I'm walking away, Ben. Our thanks to Bruce the Hun and his precious wife, Chanda. Thank you for your message of love that we could then pervert with one of our favorite impressions. If you would like to send a message to your precious prun, if you are a loving huss or whiff or anyone else, be sure to go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. You can fill out a handy form there that we will then read on the air. Personal messages are $100, $200 for a business-like message, and it helps us produce our show twice weekly.
It sure does. Thanks, guys, and on to the rest of the show. What do you say?
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. There's one scene in this episode that really makes me laugh. And so my drunk Shimoda is Riker. And the scene is when he is about to... It's like right before BB comes in. And Riker has like found a high window in his room. It's probably, 4.5 or 5 feet off the ground. And he picks up like a heavy ass bench that's sitting in front of it and is about to chuck it through the window when she comes in and she's like, "That's a terrible idea." And it cuts back to him and he like is setting the bench down and like doing like nothing to see here. I was doing curls with that bench and not trying to throw it through a window. The way he tries to play off like this hilariously physical action is so funny.
It looks like the bench is too big for the window, right?
Right. There's so many things about it that are incongruent and hilarious. And it's like, seeing somebody slip on a banana peel and try to act like they didn't almost take a dive. And it's a beloved Star Trek moment for me.
Dr. Lilith is like, "Why don't you try fucking your way out of this problem instead?"
Riker's I'm listening.
Why does no one station a security person inside a person's hospital room? We see this over and over again in TV and movies.
Yeah.
The security's always outside. Yeah. Like, why are they all hung up on privacy in hospital rooms instead of security?
Right.
Makes no sense.
This is an alien. Who cares? The rules are out the window.
My Shimoda occurs during the same scene. I mean, it's Linnell, the horny social worker. Like, I just loved her whole deal. We never know why she's there, what she's actually doing. This should be the most secure room in the world to them. And she just wanders in there with a clipboard, ready to fuck.
Yeah.
And the scene just felt fun and light, and Riker's slide whistle look on his face, when he knows he's gonna have to fuck his way out of the room. Like, I feel like it's why you join Starfleet is this mission and this moment, right?
They have to be a little bit judicious with how many times they do a scene like this in the show.
Yeah.
And like this just like it is so on the nose and yet so funny and well executed that it's like I can't complain at all,
Yeah, it's real Kirky, but it's not ham and cheese Kirk.
Yeah.
It's real great.
That's great.
It's as subtle as exchanging sex for freedom can possibly be on the show.
Boners for hostages.
Yeah, yeah. That's the Peter North, not the Oliver North trial right there.
Oh, boy.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound, and as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Dharma Kringage and Jalad
and Tanaga. What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 4, episode 16, Galaxy's Child. The Enterprise becomes surrogate mother to a huge alien creature after Picard is forced to destroy its real mother. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
That sounds pretty tragic.
Yeah.
Is this the one that one Riker video uses? The Gezora YouTube video for a show that was never produced, just called Riker?
No,
and
I haven't seen
that. This is the one
that
episode?
Wow.
There's a fun video online by YouTube user Gezora, G-A-Z-O-R-A. And it's a fun little fake television show, including an opening and a conclusion. And the only thing that happens in the episode is a giant alien gets born with Riker's face. So I'm almost positive this is that episode. But either way, we've got to watch it.
Yeah, we do. We don't have any more vetoes. I don't know if I remember this one especially well either. I feel like I was thinking it was Tin Man or...
What?
Tin Man.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then I was like confusing it with the giant space aliens from the first episode of the series. My memory is cloudy. But I'm sure it'll snap right back into place.
Well, one thing that feels like giving birth twice a week is editing and releasing these shows, Ben.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that that I guess you could call it the monetary epidural that helps ease that effort is all of our viewers going to MaximumFun.org/donate and supporting that birthing process.
Mm. Sounds like you've been caught midwife. Another way they can support us is by going to MaxFunStore.com. We now have a second shirt in the MaxFun Store, the long-awaited, long-overdue Drunk Shimoda shirt is available. And big thanks to our pal Sean Cologne for sending us a design for that. Sean directed that documentary about Fat Records that we did a Priority One message for, and he's a big supporter, and sent us a design for the Drunk Shimoda shirt, and we liked it enough that we were like, yeah, let's send it along to Patico, get that shit printed up.
I like how we're doing that. Like, I like it when viewers send in t-shirt ideas. I really liked that we designed our tour poster using Ian at Illustration. Like, yeah. I like keeping it in the family like that. So if you have more t-shirt or merch ideas, send them our way using the email address drunkshimoda@gmail.com.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. I also asked the folks about getting Drunk Shimoda pint glasses printed up, and they're cautiously interested, but they want to make sure that the shirts sell well. So if you want to see that happen, you know what to do.
That might be a piece of our own merch that I would actually purchase.
Yeah, I need more of those. So you should follow Adam on Twitter @CutForTime or me @BenjaminRAHR and use the hashtag GreatestGen to joke around about the show. There's always lots of that going on. We also have a subreddit, greatestgen.reddit.com, and there is a lively Facebook group as well. Both of those recently crossed the 1,000 member mark, which is crazy and awesome.
It's a lot of crazy people.
A lot of awesome people.
We met a lot of awesome people on our tour.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody that came out and got a poster or a t-shirt. That was just so much fun, and you know, we really had no idea what we were in for, and we felt great about it, and I hope everybody that came out felt as great as they made us feel. And we will definitely be doing some more live stuff. Hopefully 2017 has another tour in store in addition to Greatest Gen Con.
That tour financially crippled us, Ben. We gave away 3 signed Jaegers.
Yeah.
So when you're $3,000 underwater like that, that's it's going to be hard to recover from.
We need
but
people to
touring
really step
more
up. Yeah.
Will help, I'm sure. And I can't wait to run it on down the East Coast.
Yep.
The South, the Midwest, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Where else can we go? We've got listeners everywhere. Scotland.
I feel like Ireland and Scotland, we've got a lot of viewers. Maybe London, but that's an expensive town.
Well, we are going to sell out a giant theater there. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get invited to one of those Podfests or something.
That'd be great.
That would be really delightful. It would be hard for us to turn something like that down.
Point being, now that we've started, we can't be stopped.
Yep.
Thanks to you guys.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a midwifery-oriented episode of The Greatest Generation.
An afterbirth slathered episode.
We're going to take that space placenta and num 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 num.
That's a tea just gray hot for Picard. That's not Earl Grey.
No.
Tea Earl gross.
All right, I'm hitting the stop.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.